Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting a television show or season that we think you'll find interesting. In this episode, I'm joined by my sister, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on the first season of Supacell, which is a six-episode Netflix series that I'm expecting to get a second season. I think they wrote it expecting to get a second season.
Mm-hmm.
It is created by Rap Man, who apparently is a well-known British rapper, filmmaker, etc., etc. I imagine this was a bit of a passion project. Not to be reductive, but this is kind of sort of a modern take on Heroes.
Yeah.
It's set in London, a predominantly black cast.
And they make that make sense.
Yes, and that plays into the story.
Yes, beautifully.
Well, there are some non-black people, but they're really all the bad guys.
Yes.
And that makes sense too, unfortunately.
They did have some things where I felt that they were taking for granted. We had some knowledge.
Yes. There were one or two places where it would have been natural to put in a little exposition to give some background of a medical sense and stuff that plays into the storyline. I think if they had doing it without telegraphing, might have been a little difficult. But there was a character where it was a central part of a supporting character's arc, and therefore it could have been done then and should have been done then. I think it had a really good cast, but it does have a lot of similarities to Heroes, and I think has a lot of, let's not make the same mistakes Heroes did.
Yeah, well, early, and I think it was even in the first episode, I asked you if we were in a save the cheerleader, save the world situation.
Well, by the end of the first episode, we've gotten the equivalent of save the cheerleader. I mean, it's somebody's fiancé, they've just proposed and stuff, but that's kind of the equivalent, and there is no equivalent to save the world. They're not planning that grand of an arc.
Well, but to me, it was as much a, you've got all these random people who are being told, save the cheerleader, save the world, but they don't even know a cheerleader.
Well, it was mainly Hero that was told that in Heroes. Where I think Heroes went wrong for the first half of the first season, it seemed like every episode, and really in the first episode, every section between commercial breaks introduced a new character, and there comes a point where, are any of these ever going to intersect?
Yeah.
And in the first episode here, we get our five lead characters and their supporting casts.
Yes.
All pretty much set up, and there's a lot of, who are these people? Wait, is this the same one we saw before? These two live together, what's this relationship? Oh, these two are sisters. These two are on the track to get married. These other people, that's a father's son. I guess that's his ex-wife. And a number of things where it's like trying to piece all that together initially is a little overwhelming.
Ex-wife seemed to demand child support.
In cash.
To give over custody of the kid and never take him back after saying, I'll see you in a few hours.
Yes. Yeah, she's poof gone.
I mean, I thought she was demanding back child support or you don't get today's visitation.
That's what I took it as.
But then when she poofed for the rest of the series, I'm like, I misunderstood.
Well, no, the implication is the kid is still living with her. She just wasn't important enough to the narrative to stick around.
True. Well, and I was getting confused because the character Andre was saying, I just got my kid back. And I was taking that too literally.
Yes.
I got my kid back in my house.
Access to my kid.
Yes. Good point.
And again, there's a lot going on in this. Mm-hmm. And that's a plus and a minus.
Well, when I IMDb'd it, there were 13 characters in every episode.
At least.
That's a pretty long list. I mean, you've got another half dozen or so that were in five of the six. But you've got over a dozen that are listed as being in all six of the episodes.
Well, those with powers of Michael, Sabrina, Andre, Rodney, and Taser are the five leads,
mm-hmm.
each of which have a couple of supporting cast members.
I would say each of them has, in a supporting position, someone who is emotionally, I would phrase, as a sidekick. So for Michael, we've got the fiancé.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, for Sabrina, we've got the sister, Char. For Andre,
the son.
I was going to give a toss-up between the son, AJ, or the friend, John.
Well, I think in most cases, because going back to Michael, he's got the friend that owns the bar.
Yes, he's got Gabriel.
Sabrina has, there are a few people at the hospital that combined kind of fill that role.
Yeah.
But one of the patients, the matron.
And I really liked the patient.
Yeah. Andre has the son and the buddy.
Yeah.
Rodney has
Spud.
Spud, the friend. Taser has his gang.
Yeah.
We've also got a few people that are kind of antagonistic, which is mainly
Crazy.
I'm trying to think what his given name was.
Craig. And then he's got Masher. I mean, there are such great names in here, right? Masher, Braggs. It's a lot of nicknames because you're at a high level. You've got gang warfare. At one point when they changed modes of transportation for tasers. Well,
Taser's group starts out on bikes and then winds up on motorized scooters, which honestly is just not as intimidating.
I liked them on the bikes. And I liked it because, to me, and I admit I have old school thinking, but it was very much the younger generation gang was taking on the older generation gang, which was represented by Crazy and his cars.
Well, I also think in London in particular, cars are not as convenient or fast of a transportation as much as bikes or scooters or something to be getting around town.
Yeah.
So there was some of that. I think part of it for me, overall, I enjoyed the show.
Mm-hmm.
I was expecting it, particularly as we got into that last episode, to end on a note of, and we want another season,
yes,
which it did, and not in a bad way.
But in an interesting way, in terms of, we want another season, but fair warning, we're going to take a different approach.
Well, a different approach, an end of book one, start of book two kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
The flash forward at the end of the first episode isn't towards the, it didn't land us at the end of the first season. May not even land us at the end of the second season. I don't know.
I couldn't tell how far in the future it was. I asked you to let me rewatch it after we watched all six episodes so I could understand it better.
Well, and I was glad we did, because rewatching that kind of a scene from the first episode where it's like, here's where the future's going to be, even factoring in the butterfly effect, he's trying to change stuff, Michael's trying to change stuff and whatnot. Did they really know what the future of the plot was going to be when they wrote that scene?
Mm-hmm.
And I would argue, not so much.
Well, it's interesting to me in terms of, we have this ambiguous line of dialogue in the final episode where one character says, hey, I'm the only one who can do this. And another character basically says, or so you think.
Yes.
So I felt that that was, I don't want to say revisionist, but a little bit of a cover our backsides, because you had reason to believe the people in the big future showdown. One of them, I kind of thought we killed.
The problem I have with the future showdown that we see at the end of the first episode, which is basically setting Michael on his mission. He's been to the future. He's seen the showdown. It's bad. Oh, his fiance is going to die in a couple of months. That sets him on the, I've got to be the protagonist and change events. But we see the other characters, and they are, in some cases, exhibiting powers we don't see them use this season.
Powers or skills?
I'm going to go with Rodney's electrical stuff being a different power, although I think they're basing it on, well, the Flash has super speed and he could throw lightning, ergo it's the same power, which I don't believe. Michael's teleportation / time travel, to me, those are different powers.
But see, to me, Michael has a very timey-wimey teleportation.
Well, he's got two powers. He can teleport.
Oh, and stop time.
And stop time, three powers, and rewind time.
Yes. Okay. I was putting rewind time and stop time in the same time category.
But different than teleportation.
Yes.
But if his teleportation had turned out to be, he stopped time, he walked over and restarted time. That's fine. It absolutely was not.
But that's why I was putting his powers into the timey-wimey.
You could grandfather it in as it's all time space.
I was going to say, he is a TARDIS.
Kind of, sort of.
I mean, that's how we felt at times. I also felt we had one scene where I don't know who to lay this on, didn't understand the powers they had given him because he stopped time and a video of the moment showed the people walking around in the stopped time.
Yeah, that didn't make any sense because the finale had another showdown, and when he stopped time there, like, flames aren't moving.
Yeah.
So he's, like, stopping everything unless he touches them and says, yes, you can move, or whatever. So, having stopped the person, the electronics in their visor or whatever, with the camera, I would have expected to just stop.
Yeah.
And at the home base, they should have gotten a no video feed at that point, because literally none was being sent.
No video feed, or should they have gotten, like, the stop action movies you made when we were kids?
Well, if they were watching the feed,
They were playing back the...
Well, I know. Okay. They should have gotten nothing. If they were playing back what was recorded locally, they should have gotten up till it stopped, and then immediately after it continued. So they should have seen a big jump cut.
Yeah.
But I think there were a lot of things where they wanted to play with superpowers, but in a very loose movie cinematic way, not in a what I would consider traditional comic book way. Because comic book powers, classically, less so modernly, have rules. They have a mindset to them. Firestorm could transmute things, but not into living things, and there was a rationale for that. When he could turn intangible, he couldn't use that power because, and there was a rationale for that. Now, I'm not claiming these are the least bit scientific rationales, but they were scientific-ish and sold by the writer.
And consistent within the writer's universe.
Generally speaking.
Which is where I felt this let me down.
Yeah.
And I did enjoy this. Don't get me wrong. I enjoyed this.
In six episodes, I don't know that they had that many writers. I'm trying to think how many Ratman wrote.
Ratman wrote five of the six episodes. Right.
So again, I don't think he's necessarily a huge comic book aficionado. Just thought this would be a cool story to tell. And I'm not disagreeing with that. But then you look at like Andre's power. He's strong. That's it.
Yeah, and I kind of love how, because I was expecting, based on seeing him working in the call center, and he's the guy who could sell ice to an Eskimo, basically.
Oh, charisma and persuasion powers, potentially.
Right. So I was expecting either that, or when we get to the ATM, I'm like, and sweet talks the computer and is spitting out the money.
I was thinking Cyberpath at that point. When he gets to the ATM and needs money, it's like this scene is going to somehow end with the equivalent of dollar bills shooting out the slot.
Right.
Now, granted, it was British pounds, but it was exactly like that. It's just he punched it hard enough that led to it, which was ridiculous.
Well, and that seemed to be kind of his go-to. I need the money. Smash! The safe opens.
Well, okay, he did that twice. And
but
I don't see that as so much as his catch thing in terms of he didn't intend to smash. He just got mad, hit the ATM, and it spit out money. It wasn't intentional. And when it was intentional with the safe, it was empty, so it didn't spit out money.
That's true.
But that was the intent. Again, Rodney's super speed and lightning stuff was a little, again, Flash-centric, and they directly referenced the Flash.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a little hilarious to me. When he first uses the power, it's the same, I've got to catch the bus, go shoot out, you know, in this case, from the middle of London to Edinburgh, Scotland.
Outside the suburbs.
Outside the suburbs. So he didn't make it all the way to Edinburgh, or maybe he overshot, one of the two. But for super speed to work, you need to navigate. If you don't realize you're going through cities or whatever, this is how you go splat into walls.
Yeah.
So I had issues with that.
I did like the 5 minutes or it's free, but I am from the 30 minutes or less generation.
Yeah, yeah. Again, he needed to make money and he was using his powers for that. And his buddy Spud is like, you shouldn't do that, which was hilarious.
Well, and we did have different influences on different characters.
Yes.
And I think really Andre was the best example of that. Although his pseudo-angelic influence was easily tempted.
But I think Spud started out as the devil on the shoulder, and then, oh, you've got powers, that comes responsibility, and now he's the angel on the shoulder.
Yeah, yeah.
So that, I thought, was interesting.
Well, and Spud caused quite the turn for Rodney.
Yes, yes. Rodney had no time to help Michael until Spud was on life support, really.
Yeah.
At which point it's a, we need to save him.
Yeah.
And there was a good scene between Michael and Rodney about that.
That was beautiful.
Yeah. It was well done. And both are great actors.
Yes.
The one who plays Michael, Tosin Cole, was one of the companions in Jodie Whittaker's first season of Doctor Who. Did a great job there, too.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I think he had more to work with here and did a better job here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm curious to see what he does both in a second season of this, should they get it, and after this. Taser's power, though, of invisibility seemed a little out of nowhere. And if you look at that opening flash forward, he's sitting there with the knives like he's the marksman.
I think his invisibility power was because of Nana. At home, he'd rather just be invisible.
I didn't take it that way.
I took it that way from the downcast head. The am I excused now?
I took that as respect for the elder and a little indebted for she took him in when his mom vanished, all that. But I think that was also why he's trying to be the man outside the house. So I just felt that when we saw that flash forward and Sabrina's, you know, lifting a car and handing it to Andre, who's got it over his head, and Rodney's zipping around, getting the lightning bolt ready. We're seeing Michael teleport and stuff, and Taser just whips out some knives.
Mm-hmm.
The implication is his powers are around the knives.
Yeah.
He could have or should have been the telekinetic, potentially, at that point.
We see him with the knives throughout.
Oh, he definitely uses knives.
Well, but I'm just thinking that maybe that future scene was meant to show us. It showed us a few things. It showed us they learn teamwork between what we've seen and that future scene.
True, true. They can work together.
Okay. And I think the Sabrina Andre lifting the car bit is the best example of that in there. But it, I think they were trying to tell us that Taser learns responsibility with his knives and he learns to use his knives for the side of good. Whereas in the first episode, I think it is, we see him just get hot-headed and stab. And if it weren't for Michael's powers,
short series. I see where you're going with all of that. I think you
give them more credit than they
read more into that than I did, certainly. I guess for me, the problem is we see everybody else's powers. We literally do not see the Invisible Man's powers.
Yeah.
So,
but we don't see much of the fight.
We don't see any of the fight. We see a portal open, guys step out of it, a fireball thrown, and really that's about it.
And I felt the portal worked differently in episode one than later.
Yeah, and they never really set up the formation of the portal and any of that. It's just a plot device.
Yeah.
And to me, that was a big enough thing to, you got to explain that. I mean, I would have, the basic plot is people have powers, an agency is chasing them down, capturing them, experimenting on them.
Well, now, let's be fair. Either you get experimented on or you join the Suicide Squad.
I wouldn't say the Suicide Squad because they don't plant bombs in the back of the head. But you either work for them or you are incarcerated by them. But I mentioned this at one point when we actually spent a little time in this agency thing. I think that's the more interesting story.
Now, this series we did a Michael episode, a Sabrina episode.
Episodes titled for each of those.
Yes, yes,
fair. Some were more character-centric than others.
Yes, Sabrina's episode being a good example. But I'm wondering if a series two would be the equivalent of a Ray episode, since he was the guy in the headquarters.
I think flipping it to that for a second season's a dangerous move. Because as a viewer, I would expect to see the five leads.
I think we will, but I think each episode would start at the headquarters with the hunting.
Could be. It's just, how do you not change the flavor of the show too much? You see, I think you could have done a lot of the same plot events. When I say plot events versus story events, in other words, do it all from the agency's point of view of, we just got this blip of an energy spike, or this blur trail of the super speedster, or we've gotten a report of this, people trying to chase down what's happening, theorize what power might they have, how would we deal with that, and go from that.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this organization is, like many on TV and film, this all-powerful, monolithic agency that can do whatever it pretty much needs to, including the, we've got a serum we can use to block your powers or suppress your powers.
Well, and let's not forget, they're ethically challenged.
Most big organizations like this tend to get that way in movies and TV.
Well, I mean, you were listing the things that as tend to be TV, and as they tend to be, they were definitely ethically challenged.
Well, there's an aspect of, if people are developing powers in the modern society, it isn't like back in the 30s, 40s, 50s, or 60s, where the general populace would believe, yeah, some of these might be good guys and try to fight for right. Sure, they're going to be a couple of bank robbers, whatever, but there'll be some heroes too. I don't know that that would be a reasonable expectation out of the more modern culture, at least here in the U.S., which is a sad commentary, at least of my perception of the U.S. I mean, hopefully I'm wildly mistaken on this. But there's such a me-centric aspect that you've got to assume people are going to act in their own self-interest,
well,
as these characters do.
And we had,
and believably so.
We had basically a gang leader, a delivery truck driver, a frequently unemployed...
Well, an ex-con.
Yeah.
Who's frequently unemployed now.
The dope dealer.
The dope dealer and...
A nurse.
The nurse.
And South London is apparently a very small community.
I was amazed how many times... Because we got one in the first episode. Michael is walking down a hall in the hospital, having just visited his mother. He goes past a door. Out comes some of Taser's gang members. They go down the hall. As Michael passes another door, out behind him comes...
Sabrina
walking down and such.
Yeah.
And this isn't the only time. There's like one place where Michael is sitting in a booth and Andre's on the other side, and Michael's basically bemoaning, I've still got to go find this guy.
Yeah.
You know, there are so many things where they wind up at the same party or the same place or whatever that, I mean, how many episodes did it take for them to all finally, well, really, the band doesn't get together until the final episode in the showdown.
Agreed.
We get almost all of them, four of the five, an episode or two earlier. But given how many times their orbits intersect, overlap, or otherwise are fairly adjacent, the fact it takes that long to get the group together, given Michael's impetus at the end of the first episode of get them together.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm excluding the flash forward scene where they're all there.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't see that as any kind of fault of the narrative or anything. But there were a couple of, if he had just turned around, if he'd walked two booths further down or something.
Well, and he did know what Andre looked like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was starting to think through that one, too, would that have really worked or not. It was acceptably well written. There were a few things I think they could have punched up a little here and there, tightened up a little bit, been a little more consistent on the powers or something like that. But nothing that I felt was a fatal flaw. It had good cast members.
It really did, yeah.
It would have helped me initially if there was a little bit more to differentiate the characters.
Yes.
Because there were so many thrown at us so fast.
Mm-hmm. Dion and Sabrina, you've got a social worker and a nurse. They were very similar in a lot of respects. Attitude, etc.
Attitude, similar-ish length hair.
Yeah.
I mean, I had the same problem on... early episodes when I was first watching Lois and Clark.
Mm.
You've got Dean Cain as Clark Kent and Michael Landis as Jimmy Olsen, who's about the same height, roughly the same build, a little skinnier, whatever. Dark hair, you know, that kind of a thing. People are sneaking around at night. Wait, which character is this kind of a deal? And it's when it's like, hey, I haven't gotten used to these faces yet. I haven't figured these people out. And I'll be honest, even near the end of the season, I was still having a little bit of problem here and there. Of we're bouncing between a dozen plus characters.
Mm-hmm.
I've got to get back into where are we, who are we with, which of the five major threads are we going with, and what were their names again? And I have a hard time with names. That's on me. I'll freely fess up. So I don't think they did anything bad or intentionally confusing, but there were a couple of times where if Sabrina had been in a nurse's outfit more often, or there'd been some other signature look that differentiated them,
mm-hmm.
or substantially different hairstyles or something. And this is something where a lot of shows, Power Rangers is a great example of this. You're going to have one or two girls. They're going to have, one's going to have blonde hair, one's going to have dark hair, or otherwise short, long, something very mm-hmm. obviously different. You're going to have the three guys, again, they're going to have different hair. They're color-coded in the, yep. the outfits. That helps a ton.
Yeah.
One of them is going to be Caucasian. The other two are going to be of different ethnicities.
Well, but here at one point we had Michael in his work uniform, so we'd know who he was as he's going around on the streets asking a question nobody in their right mind would be going around asking while in their work uniform.
Yeah, that one bothered me. Well, but also they did with Andre having the beard and mustache and stuff, that helped set him apart.
Mm-hmm.
So there are things like that you can do. None of these characters wore glasses. If one of them wore glasses,
yeah.
that could have been the difference between Dion and Sabrina that would have helped.
Yeah.
Little things like that that act as a visual shortcut for us. Part of why superheroes wear costumes in the comics is for quick and easy identification by the reader.
Yep.
And there was none of that here. I mean, the bad guys all wore black get-ups with hoodies, face mask type things. So they were interchangeable stuntmen. And I don't think that was accidental or unexpected. And they at least
gave some, I'm going to say, use to the face mask?
There was some of it more implied in terms of it had a night vision or heat vision or thermal vision, not heat vision. It's not like it shoots rays out. I had to stop and correct myself.
Yeah, nope, that worked.
Stickler on terminology, what can I say? But also the video cameras to record an image and send a feedback.
Mm-hmm.
So there was some rationale there. But we saw and understood so little of the organization behind them, other than in, you know, when Andre's getting recruited and such. We never really got what's their hierarchy, how many of these agents do they have, any of that until the final kind of confrontation.
Yeah.
And honestly, the season ended on a bit of a downer.
Yes.
Which is part of why I think it mandates a second season, and not necessarily in my favorite of ways.
Well, it also ended on a reveal I had seen coming since, like, the first episode.
Since the character was introduced, this is the big bad. This is the person behind the scenes of the organization.
Mm-hmm.
How can it not be?
Yeah.
And there were a lot of things tossed out as to, oh, because the tagline for the series was along the lines of people in South London develop powers. And the only thing they have in common is they're black. Okay. In the show, we start realizing, wait, they do have one or two other things in common.
Mm-hmm.
So could it be this? Could it be this? Ah, here's what's going on. And then we get a certain character introduced in a certain way. And given this was a white character and a predominantly black narrative, was I surprised they turned out to be the highest ranking figure on the evil side we've seen to date? No, not at all.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that is a bad thing. If I were creating the show, honestly, I would have been less transparent and telegraphy about it, but probably would have done a similar thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because British society, much like American society, white people are in the power structure.
Yeah.
What would be more terrifying to the power structure than suddenly a formerly heavily oppressed and now a little less heavily oppressed ethnicity is developing superpowers, super speed, super strength, telekinesis, teleportation, time manipulation, all sorts of blatantly terrifying things in the hands of individual citizens who at times are very understandably unhappy with how they've been treated.
Yeah.
Yes, there's a reason to be terrified of that. Solution? Don't oppress the people. Don't give them so many things to be upset about.
Yes.
Easy to say, hard to...
Yeah.
Unfortunately, society has a hard time doing it, although I don't think it should be a hard thing to do, but that's a separate problem. It's, again, narratively, I get where they were coming from on certain things. And I think they were the right choices because aspects of these things ring true.
Mm-hmm.
But it also goes down to one of the struggles I had with the series. And I think you had it in places too. I am almost, but not really, embarrassed to admit we turned on subtitles on this.
Okay, but part of that was a mixture of British accents.
It was absolutely a mixture of heavy, in some cases, British accents.
And then when we get to the subtitles, they're using a jargon we're not accustomed to.
The jargon was a lot of it.
And once we had the subtitles on, I'm like, oh, I was trying to turn that into a word I'm familiar with. That's not a word I'm familiar with.
The US and the UK are two nations separated by a common language.
Yeah.
Within each of those are the different subcultures and the way they use terminology. And the way different groups of people, either regionally within the states or areas of the UK, or within ethnicities, speak, the phrases they use. I mean, the problem I've had with some characters in some of the British shows we watch, to my ears, some of them, even if they're speaking in that British accent that just sounds heavily educated, they're using different pronoun choices than we would use.
Mm-hmm.
Me mom versus my mother. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Things like that, that to my ear at times registers as less educated, even though I intellectually know that's absolutely not the case. That's how they speak there. And there's mm-hmm. nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
It just is foreign, literally, to my ears. Well, and there was a lot of that here.
Instead of saying brother, they were saying brava.
I couldn't tell how much of that was subtitling versus the script.
That, I think, is the equivalent of Mark Twain, capturing the sound of yeah. the area.
Well, and there were definitely some cases where some of the idioms they were using I was a bit unfamiliar with. Mm-hmm. There was one of praise the day or something like that, which was actually something that was used in the end of the first Kingsman movie. And there was a line where in the trivia for the movie in IMDb commenting that some people thought that meant, because Eggsy was saying that to his young sister, and people thought he was implying the name was Daisy and it was a shortened version or something because of how they heard it.
Yeah, yeah.
But there were a couple of things here with the drug lingo, the gang lingo,
mm-hmm.
other things of that sort that I was having a hard time parsing some of that. And some of that is so many different characters, some of them with very different accents than others, some of them with more pronounced accents than others,
mm-hmm.
to my ears at least. I mean, there are going to be some people that don't have a problem with this. The later in the day it gets, the harder it is for me to parse some of this.
Well, years ago I was in London. I was asking a street vendor for directions. I had to ask him to give it to me 6 times, and finally he just pointed with his hands because he realized I was just struggling, and he wasn't using the words left and right, which was part of the struggle.
Ah, well, when you're asking a question and expecting the answer to have certain key words to clue you in,
mm-hmm.
and none of them are there, that's a little problematic. So there were a couple of times where having the subtitles on definitely helped.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of things going on. And part of it, again, is which plot line are we in? Which character are we with?
Mm-hmm.
I need a little more context so I can understand what sort of things they're going to be talking about.
Well, I needed the most help with Taser and the gangs.
Yes, yes.
And like they would use init, I-N-N-I-T. And I kept, when we weren't doing the subtitles, I kept trying to turn that into a familiar word.
Like, isn't it or something? Yes. Yeah. I'll be honest, I sometimes have similar problems with varying forms of kind of street lingo and stuff in American films too, of I am not part of those subcultures, and therefore you mm-hmm. toss in a little too much street slang and sometimes I get it, sometimes I don't.
I read a book recently that was set in Victorian era Toronto, and I hit the same problem.
Yeah. I think it would be hilarious to see a uber cliche gang scene. And I think we've actually seen this a few times. I want to say, I'm forgetting the name of the movie. But see that and then do it again, but instead of street lingo, overeducated.
Well, that's basically the attitude, if you will, behind this book that came out within the past year called James. And it's Huckleberry Finn from the perspective of Jim, but it's what if the slaves were basically playing dumb when the masters and the whites were around, so they wouldn't realize how smart they really were.
Well, what I was thinking is basically take the cliche gangster or gang, I should say, scene and stuff where they're doing all the slang lingo and stuff, completely rewrite it with the same intent and meaning of the dialogue, but in overeducated college professorial speech. And there was a scene in Hollywood Shuffle, I think it was, where it was the same sort of a thing. You had a couple of actors doing that thing, cut, and suddenly it's like they are professors over in the UK. And just again, well, this is what we got to do to make a living.
Yeah. Well, in the book James, they have a scene where it's after hours and the adult slaves are teaching the children how to sound like an illiterate slave when they're around the white masters. And they are purposely teaching them how to speak with bad grammar around others.
There are times I wonder if some aspects of our culture are self-perpetuating.
Mm.
Well, that's what we see on TV. Ergo, that's how those sorts of people act. I must act that way. I found, though, that we got a good stratification of types of characters, for the most part. Some of them looked a little too much alike, but we had business owners, delivery drivers, fair number of drug dealers, gang members. What we didn't have in the people with powers, anybody that was kind of excessively well off.
But we were in South London.
Ergo, they wouldn't have been in that part of town?
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
I mean, we had the row houses, the townhouses, basically.
Yes.
And then we had the estates, as they called them.
Well, and
which would be like the projects here.
Michael and Dion's place seemed to be in a decent apartment complex.
Yeah. And that seemed to be sort of halfway between the row houses and the estates.
But nobody really above middle class.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, you could argue some of the drug dealers may have had more money, but I don't know that we really saw anyone who was living high on the hog.
Even when we saw Crazy's mom's place, I thought we were still seeing a row house.
I think so. It was interesting seeing different parts of London, and I never really got the sense of how wide of an area the story took place in.
Mm-mm.
And that's not a problem. It's just interesting, and part of that's just my ignorance of London geography versus it wasn't really that relevant to the story.
Yeah.
Overall, I liked it. Like I said, I'm expecting it to get a second season.
Me too.
Definitely want to watch it. One of the things that made me think it would be fun to do was the concept. Another one was Tosin Cole, who we'd seen in Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
But I also enjoyed a lot of the other actors they got for the show.
I really felt they cast well. I mean, the kid who played AJ, this is, from what IMDb is showing, his first production, and I thought he did quite well for first production.
I liked who they got for a lot of the characters. Rodney, he took me a little bit to warm, too.
Yeah.
But once I did, it's like, he's doing some really good stuff here.
You know, what turned me around on Rodney was actually the scene with his mom.
He definitely showed some range there, absolutely.
Yeah.
Andre, I thought, was well cast. He did a good job. I think both the actress for Sabrina and for Dion, both of them did very well.
Sabrina had a wonderful way of holding her ground, and she did really great in the scene with the patient who referred to her as my nurse.
Yes. Yeah. You could see why certain patients liked her as a nurse and stuff. There were just a lot of good moments here and there.
Yeah.
And overall, the plot held together. It didn't get quite as far as I was expecting it to. But again, I think they've got a bigger picture plan than just a season. Blatantly obvious, that is. I just don't know how many seasons they're planning to go for or how many they will get.
Yeah.
Because I've seen a few other shows, yep, we've got a 5-year plan, but we're lucky to get 2.
Yeah.
I think the best example of that, I've got to say, is Dollhouse.
Mm-hmm.
Where that second season, anything that was not part of the overall arc from what would have been seasons 2, 3, 4, and 5 chucked, and it felt like in some episodes, individual episodes, we covered what would have been spread across half a season of stuff, and it's just pedal to the metal and go.
Yeah.
We've never done episodes on Dollhouse. No, we haven't. We should think about that.
Yeah.
Because particularly that second season is so accelerated and has some great stuff. First season was good, too. Anyways, Supercell was a lot of fun. It's on Netflix. It is, I want to say, 5-6 hour runtime.
Mm-hmm. Sounds about right.
So not that big of a time investment. And I think well worth watching.
Yeah. Takes a little bit to get going. But once it does, I really enjoyed the ride.
Yeah. A little bit to get going. Way less than Heroes.
Yes.
And I felt, honestly, had a little bit... What they covered in 6 episodes took Heroes a longer time to even come close to accomplishing. And I felt this had no real fat on it. It just moved forward.
Well, and I felt there was a lot of good stuff in the final showdown.
Yeah.
That final showdown was an emotional roller coaster in a lot of good ways.
Well, and sets up interesting potential for a second season.
Yeah.
And if they can build on that and continue to move forward, make some progress, and either end there or have a logical, and this is why we need a third season, without it feeling like a retread or is this ever going to end or any of that stuff. If they can stay focused and have a clear trajectory throughout, they'll do great.
Yeah.
So, anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool. Thanks for listening to this episode. If you liked this episode, please spread the word about the Comic Book Page podcast by telling your friends and posting a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And please, join our Slack community and let us know what you thought of this episode. I do this podcast because I enjoy talking about comics. So let's talk about comics. The show notes, form, and instructions for how to join our Slack channel can be found at www.comicbookpage.com. The opinions of the co-hosts and guests are their own. The Comic Book Page podcast is copyright John Mayo. And thanks again for listening.